Evening. We are your hosts tonight, Diane Booth and
Joan Farnham.
And we are going to have a great conversation tonight about orchids. Joining us this evening is going to be Stan Smith. Welcome, Stan.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Stan hasn't been in the studio tonight, so this will be his first time joining us. He is a local orchid grower. We're glad to have him. And Gary Anderson. Gary, are you on the line?
Oh,
hello, Gary.
Hi.
Hi, Gary. Gary is going to be joining us. He is the president of the Northern Orchid Society out of Duluth. So welcome, you guys. It'll be a fun conversation tonight about orchids. Northern Gardening airs on the second Thursday of every month from 7 to 8 p.m., and it's hosted by the Northwoods Food Project and Cook County Extension. It's also rebroadcast at 6 a.m. on the second Saturday morning of the month. So if you don't catch us live, you can catch us non-live. Call in and share with us your story about orchids. I have a hunch we all have a really good one to tell. Barb's going to share one with us. And gardening questions that you may have for Stan and Gary. The number is 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847. You can also email questions and comments to WTIP@boreal.org.
So I'm going to just break in here since I totally don't know anything about orchids.
Okay, Joan.
What is an orchid?
Oh, good question. I didn't even think to think about that one.
Yeah, okay, what is an orchid?
Stan and Gary, go for it.
Okay.
Well, I can start out by telling you an orchid is a perennial plant. They are all perennial. They are all in the plant kingdom. Not all are capable of photosynthesis, which we could get into, but most are. It's distinguished. It's also the most successful and the most abundant of all plants in terms of the number of species that exist in nature. It is distinguished mostly by the way its reproductive structure is put together. Instead of having the anthers that have pollen on the end of them. And
that's the male part of the plant.
Yes, okay. And the female part of the plant, which takes the pollen.
Right.
All of this is, and these are usually individual on most perennial plants. In an orchid, these things coalesce into one structure. And depending upon the type of orchid and its strategy for reproduction, they vary quite a lot, but basically all of your pollen is located in one or two capsules on the end of the structure, the column, and the part that accepts the pollen is located further back in the body of the plant or in the flower of the plant.
Okay, so but if there's not a flower, how do we know if it's an orchid?
That is real tough. You will walk by them by the hundreds, I think.
Okay.
When they're not in bloom, even up here, they're hard to identify.
Okay.
They can look like grass.
Okay. Gary, do you have anything to add?
Well, I would just say, adding to what Stan said, they're a very old genus or classification of plants. They've been around for a very long time. So they've diversified very, very much. And so besides the sexual parts that are common, and I believe the seed is pretty similar in that they don't have, I believe it's called endosperm.
They don't have any food attached
for the
young embryo.
Oh, right. So that makes it hard. That's why they're hard to reproduce by seed, because they don't have any backup?
Right.
Yeah, I think Stan knows more about that, but basically they need a fungus. As when they get dispersed.
Mycorrhizal fungi become really important for them to get their nutrients.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Huh.
So oftentimes they can only reproduce like next to the plant in nature for the most part because that mycorrhizal fungi specific for that plant is there.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just going to keep asking this because these are the myths that I, know about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're blooming. They're blooming is, people just go on and on about orchids blooming and They have scents, and I don't know. So tell us about this. What is it that is so fascinating about orchids to orchid growers? What is it that pulled you?
Well, it's the diversity is certainly. You can go to a show, and you might see 500, 600, 700, 800 orchids, and none look alike.
Right.
As I said, the most successful family of plants they've so far identified now over 25,000 species worldwide, and from that, hybridizers have made about another 75,000 hybrids. And the colors, the combination of colors and leaf patterns, you get all kinds of different patterns on the leaves. I think to just the uninitiated, that's probably the things that fascinates people and why we have our attendance at our shows is so good.
Guys do the state fair.
We do the exhibit. State fair and the winter carnival also at St. Paul, which
Who's
we can
we?
Talk about. We is, well, I'm a member of the Minnesota Orchid Society of Minnesota. Gary's also a member of the Orchid Society of Minnesota, plus he's the president of the Northland Orchid Society in Duluth. He can tell you about that. But
I've seen some of your demonstrations at the fair where you have, like, the growth media in the bottles. I mean, it's like if you're into microbiology and ever always wanted to do that, this is your hobby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is,
So, Gary, what do you think? I mean, what draws you to them, to orchids?
Well, I've had them for a very long time, probably 30 years, and just as a plant that I collected from or I received from other people, and I didn't know what to do with them, and I just tried to keep them alive, and eventually, after I've killed them, I got into a position where I met other people that were growing orchids, and so you learn a little bit more. So you try a little harder and try to figure out what they need and what you're doing wrong.
So the plants sort of determine your life.
Well, yeah, it's just like gardening. You just try to improve what you're your practices and get the blooms.
So is it kind of like being a bonsai collector where you have them? And most people I know that have orchids, they either have a lot of them or they don't have hardly any.
Yeah.
They really get into them, and then you have them for a long time, and they're like, I don't want to say this, but children, kind of?
Well, yeah.
They're special.
Yeah. Yeah, they are special.
They talk to me. No.
Well, there's an old saying in growing orchids that one is too many and 100's not enough.
Yeah.
And that proves true for most of my friends and myself. Once you get in it, you either give it up in disgust and don't ever want to pick up another one, or you begin to add to your collection.
Right.
It's just fascinating, the different growth habits, the different patterns, the times when they bloom and how they bloom, and it is addicting to some people.
And
to
a lot of the crossbreeding, you know, the products of some of that look like they come from outer space. I mean, they're incredible blooms.
So let's assume that we have people out there listening who are saying, okay, most of the orchids that we're talking about come from the tropics. And I live in northern Minnesota, or I live in northern Wisconsin, or whoever's listening is in a cold climate. So talk about a little bit about the different types of orchids that are out there. And talk a little bit about the ones that are most common. I mean, you see them in the big box stores.
Well, and we have an orchid. Minnesota flower is an orchid.
Right.
The lady slippers.
It is.
Okay, let's talk. Can we start there? So lady slippers you can find in the woods. And then there are others, too.
Yeah. Dan, you want to?
Oh, well, sure. We can talk about that.
We can talk about that.
Yeah, the lady slipper, we can get scientific. Most of us that have been in orchids for a while, we start throwing taxonomic words out there. But let's just say that they are the North American version of the lady slipper orchid. Their counterpart in South America is called a Phragmopedium, and they are also slipper-type orchids with the pouch. And in Southeast Asia, in the Asian Pacific Rim, we have what are called a Paphiopedilum. and they too have the pouches and look fairly similar in many respects. They don't interbreed. They are distinct genera, and they will not interbreed. And anyway, what I could tell you that the Cypripedium regini is found in Cook County. I've seen it a number of times on
which is in common terms.
Oh, that's the showy lady slipper, yeah, our state flower. Okay. Yes, and we have several other slipper orchids in Cook County. I've only seen one other one, but it's quite common. It's called a pink or stemless lady slipper. And then there are again others of those that I have still haven't found. But plus, there's a number of that are not of the pouch variety, are not lady slipper varieties. A lot of what are habenary or fringed orchids. Several of them. There are the ones that are, let me see if I've got
the purple fringed orchid is really common here.
Yes, it is.
I have a lot of those in my field, and they're very beautiful.
They are. They're just majestic as all get out.
Yep,
yeah.
They can be up to 3 feet tall.
Yep. And they're often found in roadside ditches. I know there's some along the Pike Lake Road if you drive out that way.
Yeah.
And then there are several others of that type. One other of that type, for sure, in Cook County, because I have it on my property, is called a ragged fringed orchid. It's smaller than the pink, and it's mostly green and white, but its all other characteristics are very similar. And then there's the coral roots, of which there are at least three I know up here that I found.
Yep.
And the coral root is interesting. You could have some on your property.
Yeah, you don't really see them until all of a sudden they just come out of the ground.
They don't necessarily bloom every year. I believe they're saprophytic. They don't have any green chlorophyll or anything.
Yep, so they just kind of rise up, and they'll be spotted. Some of them are spotted, some of them are white. They'll last for a short period of time, and then they're gone, and they're very ephemeral. You just see them for a short period of time, and they're gone.
Right.
But these are hard to have in your garden outside.
Yeah.
Right?
Besides probably being illegal to collect in nature.
Yeah.
Yes, they're very difficult moving them and so forth. From what I understand of those that have tried in the past, it's very difficult to get them to survive.
Yeah.
They just don't like to be disturbed, and their habitats are quite specific. Plus, they look neat where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you an excuse to go into a bog or
into
a forest or something like that. And so, there are a lot of them. In the Cascade River Valley, I know I have a buddy who claims to have photographed virtually all Minnesota orchids in situ, says there were 20-some varieties that he and his wife came upon in some years of looking in the Cascade from the mouth of the river up the watershed.
I'm not surprised, because there's a pretty big diversity of terrain there, and it stays fairly cool, which a lot of these orchids like, the native orchids here do like.
Mm-hmm.
So, but let's talk a little bit about the orchid that you might get for Easter from the big box store, the Phalaenopsis, because that's where it seems like, is that like number two? I think it's the number two plant that's given out in the United States now. It's amazing.
Yeah, I wouldn't know the numbers on that, but yeah, it certainly is very, very popular.
Yeah.
You find them in grocery stores, the big box stores.
And they never used to be that common.
Right.
It's
good and it's bad. Back when I started collecting, and I don't know, but Gary's known this for a long time too, you spend a lot of money to get an orchid.
Right.
Even a Phalaenopsis might cost you $20 or $30 in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you lost one then, it was fairly significant. Now, they're being mass-produced by the tens of thousands in California and Florida. And that's good. It makes it very accessible to people that have got $10. You can buy an orchid for $10.99 at Home Depot sometimes.
How are they mass produced?
Well, it's just so they have a climate, and I have been into some of these greenhouses. The greenhouse, I've been in one company in California near San Diego that has six greenhouses. Each was about the size of a football field. They're all undercover. They didn't have to worry much about air. They just blew air. They didn't have cold. They didn't have warm. So it was very moderate climate, which the plants liked. And they learned the process of culturing. They have it down to a science, and they can mass produce these things.
So they have their little fine paintbrush things.
They went through that. Yeah, they went through that process at the beginning, but they can grow them all, and not only that, they can grow them now, and they're doing
tissue goofy culture.
Things.
Yeah. They do them in tissue culture in little flasks.
And and Taiwan is a large producer also.
Correct, out of the country, right.
So the climate is just perfect. There's no real expense for heat or...
So like if you're trying to propagate like a house plant, you know, you put like rutone in it and you put it, you know, right in the dirt. Is that what you mean by tissue culture? Okay, what is tissue culture?
How do they reproduce them?
Okay, well,
talk about that.
I can tell you there are really 3 days. I'll go over the easy ones first. Some Phalaenopsis just have a tendency to produce keikis, which are baby plants at the flower stem node.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fairly unique to a select number of species. And if you leave the stem on after the flowers fall off, sometimes you'll see these things grow out and they'll be in a duplicate of the mother plant. You can also reproduce.
So what do they do with them? If they have those little baby plants, those little keikis, what do they do with them?
Yep, leave them on the mother stem until they have roots about an inch and a half long. At about an inch and a half long, you can cut the stem off of either side where you now just have that plant. You could put it in the same medium that we'll talk about for putting them, you know, a new plant in, okay, or one you want to repot.
Okay.
They go into a standard Phalaenopsis mix and take off from there. I do that. I have done that many times in the past, and I've got a nice, big, showy white Cattleya that I intend to do it to. The part is going to tell you that's the natural way of doing it. You can also buy a paste. It's a chemical paste sold by orchid supply companies that you can paste on those nodes and actually force a plant that wouldn't otherwise produce a keiki there to do it.
It's like rutone.
Kind of like a rutone, yeah.
Sort of like that.
But it's a different product,
right,
I'm assuming.
It contains a bunch of enzymes and things in it that trick the plant into to doing that.
Okay, so Gary, if you don't do it that way, how do you do it with the agar solution and the flasks that Barb was talking about?
Well, that really is not something you can do at home. You can do it, but you'd have to really have a set up a very sterile situation with a, you know, without letting your room air get into the procedure. It's very difficult to do.
So if person
so you
wants
to do it, really,
if
you would,
but if a person wants to, they can go online and watch the YouTubes and show exactly how to do it, right?
Yeah,
you can do it that way. But there are commercial labs that will take your ripened seed pod that you've produced. You can mail it to them,
and they do it for
a
you.
A certain period of time, they will send you back the flask with the little baby orchids in them.
With the dozens and dozens of orchids.
Is that what you guys do?
No.
No, it's a lot of work. Some people like that aspect of it. I prefer to get them when they can be blooming within the next 3 or 4 years anyway, not 7 or 8.
So the Phalaenopsis that we see at the big box stores that you all get for Easter or whatever, they're probably made in Taiwan or California, and they're making thousands and thousands of these, which is why they're so cheap. So what does a person do when they get one? Because a lot of times I've talked to people and they say, I got this beautiful orchid, it lasted 3 months and then it died. Well, what do people do?
Good question.
I mean, they would like to keep it going, especially if it's a gift from someone, because they come to visit you and they say, where's your orchid? I killed it.
Well, I'll just say there's several things you have to do. You have to make sure that they're not sitting in water. That's a problem with most orchids you buy. They're put into pretty containers with no drainage. So probably, if you want to keep your orchid for a long time, you'll have to figure out a way to either let the orchid, if it's in sphagnum moss, which usually is what it is if you buy it from a big box store, let it get almost dry. Otherwise, take it out of the container and run the water through it, and then put it back into the container. The problem is people just leave the orchid in the container and they water it and it's flooding the roots, and the roots, the Phalaenopsis, they actually grow on, the roots attach themselves to trees. And
so they're an epiphyte, right?
Right.
What's that?
And when epiphytes are They don't take nourishment from the tree, but they do use the tree to hold on to.
Physically hang on to the tree with their roots, which are adhesive when they're being formed. And they may be fed by other sources or getting nothing from the tree other than an anchorage point.
Right. So how do these orchids eat?
Well,
good question.
You want to do that one?
Yeah. They just absorb through those roots. But the big thing is to imagine them when you're taking care of this Phalaenopsis, is to imagine how it is in their natural world. They're attached to a tree or some shrub, and it rains a lot, and the rain runs right off of them. So that's why they don't like a lot of water. They don't like to be sitting in water. And the insects that are on the tree or all the nutrients they get are just natural from decaying debris and such that are caught up in the tree roots.
If a person gets one of these, they don't like to be sitting in water. They don't like a lot of fertilizer then. Are you talking like a quarter strength fertilizer when every other time you water, or how do people know how to do that?
That standard recommendation that I've seen is quarter strength. They say, some say water weekly or fertilize weekly, W-E-A-K. Weekly.
Good play.
So, yeah, don't water more than once a week.
And water them by, and then make sure there's no standing water in
correct.
The container.
You want them to dry out between waterings. You certainly can miss the upper
wood,
surfaces.
The roots, I mean.
You don't want to do that. And the other,
because you say when they're growing on trees, they're just absorbing.
Well, yeah, they are, but the roots that you, for sake of our convenience, we have taken these plants from their hanging habitat on trees and put them in pots so that we can move them about. And putting them in pots, now those roots are intermingled amongst bark and or sphagnum moss, whichever medium you prefer. And you put water into that, introduce water into that, and it's going to stay there for quite a while and eventually dry. Maybe over the course of a week, it'll get dry again. And the worst thing you can do is to rewater a plant before the roots became dry. You then begin the process of root decay, and it'll ultimately kill your plant.
Okay, so a couple of people have talked to me about orchids, and they talk about, I add one ice cube every week, or two ice cubes, or three ice cubes. Talk about the ice cube method.
Oh,
for watering. Okay, Gary, you went, what's going on?
It's a joke.
Okay.
Between our members, because it does work to some extent if you're not, if you're using sphagnum moss, it works because the moss is, it doesn't get too wet, it doesn't get too dry. It gives you the amount of water that you would use to keep the plant alive.
Okay,
it doesn't mean the plant will thrive.
Okay, so the water you want to slowly, so if the ice cube is because it's melting very slowly and it gives it a chance to absorb the water, what about the cold temperature?
Yeah, that's bad news.
Oh, that's the bad news.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys don't recommend the ice method.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
So, how about the fertilizer? What do you do? You fertilize weekly, W-E-A-K-L-Y, once a week, with a standard 10-5-10. What do you use? Fish emulsion?
Schultz Miracle-Gro houseplant type fertilizer, not probably garden fertilizer, not pelleted, but liquid fertilizer that you can dilute in a gallon of water or in a quantity of water. Use it at about a quarter of the strength that it recommends for your houseplants.
Okay.
And you can, to be on a really safe side, if you want to make sure you're going to avoid tip burn on the plant, fertilize three times out of four, then rest it. Just plain water the fourth time.
Kind of rinses it through.
Yeah, flushes it out.
So if you're just joining us on Northern Gardening, we're talking about orchids. Actually, we're talking about the moth orchids right now, which are the ones you see at the big box stores, the Phalaenopsis, with Stan Smith and Gary Anderson, and they're going to share with us how not to be overwhelmed by all the orchid choices that are out there and what to do. So please call us at 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847. You can also email questions and comments to WTIP@boreal.org.
And I want to remind you that Northern Gardening is supported by Buck's Hardware, offering a full selection of gardening supplies, organic options, and weather-hardy annuals and perennials when the time comes. More information is available online at buckshardware.net and also by Edwin E. Thorson Incorporated, contractors working to fill landscaping needs in the Northland and are celebrating over 60 years of serving Cook County. 387-1644.
So I had a Phalaenopsis, and what I liked about it is and probably what you guys like about it is that the flowers last for a really long period of time, correct? 1 to 2 to 3 months,
correct.
Depending upon the variety.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I would cut my old flowers off at a node, I would get regrowth. Talk about that a little bit.
Yes, you can do that. If you cut back to basically the last node before the flowering began, the initial flowering began, you cut back to that node and let it sit, it will rebloom. Mm-hmm. You'll get fewer in number. And also what happens, most of us don't do that because then it's taking energy that would be putting toward the next year's bloom, which might otherwise be even better than the one you just had. Mm-hmm. So there's a cost for doing that. Mm-hmm. You will have your flowers longer. You'll have them an additional month or two, whatever the case might be. It just is going to affect the following year's production of flowers.
Okay, so if you want to have it during the winter months, all winter long, go ahead and do that, knowing mm-hmm. that plant might need a longer rest period before it will actually do a good job of flowering again.
Very possibly, yeah. They're not on any calendar that we know of, so, yeah.
Yeah, it might take 2 years to get another good spike off.
Okay. So talk a little bit about some of these orchids have to have differences in temperatures for flower formation. You know, and if you have them all at the exact same temperature, sometimes they don't bloom. So if your orchid isn't blooming, talk about why.
And lighting, too.
And lighting, yeah.
What is the temperature? What is optimum temperature?
And what is the lighting?
Yeah, let's talk about
let's
that.
Let's talk about it.
You got it at home. Okay, you figured out the water. You figured out the fertilizer. Now what do we do?
Gary, what do you want to take on there?
I would say, it's somewhat a problem. The Phalaenopsis, you know, is going to be a warm plant. They are from the Asian area.
But what do you mean by warm? What temperature do they like?
They like it very warm, probably 80s, 70s. I've never lived, you know, in a tropical area, so I can only go by what happens here. They do like to do the vegetative growth when it's warm.
Okay.
70s, 80s. And if they're well shaded, they will appreciate that. Now, in order to bloom a Phalaenopsis, you do need about a 15-degree drop in nighttime temperature, and that's pretty easy to do for us. The homes usually have at least a 15-degree drop here. So it's not really a problem.
So do they like a lot of humidity? I mean, do you put them on pebble trays?
Well, yes. They're practically all orchids are going to like some humidity. I do use pebble trays. I do mist a bit if the humidity. I have a gauge to see what the house humidity is, so I keep an eye on that. If it's in the 40% range, you might want to bump it up if you can to at least 50%, which is difficult in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Right, but if you set them on trays with pebbles and put water there and set them on top of the pebbles in there,
right.
containers, then that keeps the humidity. And do you group them together, too? I mean, does that help?
Sure.
Yeah. Stan, what about lighting?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you about lighting. The Phalaenopsis and Paphiopetalus, which we haven't talked about yet, but that's another fairly easy-growing one. They like indirect, moderately bright light, if you can imagine what that is. I'm going to give you a...
that's
yeah,
like
okay.
weekly.
Okay, I'm going to give you an example that's it's kind of the standard example for determining if the light is about right. You set your plant where there's a light source, and if you put your hand about 1 foot above the top of the leaf, if it casts a shadow, the mm-hmm. plant is getting a little bit too much light. You want it to where at about a foot above the plant, your hand no longer casts a shadow over the plant leaf. And when you've got the light diminished about that far, that's just about perfect for the Phalaenopsis. Paphiopetalums will take a little bit more light, but not much. You would grow them in pretty much the same conditions. In a home, an east window is a really good place to grow them. They okay. probably could take most a little morning sunlight without getting overheated.
Uh-huh.
West window would be out. A south window would be out unless it were you had some kind of linen screen or curtain across, a sheer curtain across in front of the window, because they cannot take that kind of light. The other thing for people that have newer homes, the new glass that's being put in windows is called low E. For energy conservation purposes, cuts out ultraviolet and infrared.
Right.
So mine sit in direct, so I'm cheating. Mine can sit in direct sunlight.
And they're okay.
They're just fine. They love it because the only part that it gets rid of is the part that the plants don't want anyway. So if you're going to have new glass put in, that would be the kind to get.
So if you're really an orchid lover, you want to have new glass put into your house.
Some people, just replacement glass and that sort of thing. Most of it's coming that way now. Yeah. So
do you use any supplemental lighting? Like, we're all we're vegetable growers. We put ours under, additional lighting. Do you guys do that?
Yeah, I think most of us that start out, if we run out of windowsill space, which we usually do in a hurry, then the next step is probably to go to fluorescent lights. And just a regular old shop light. Instead of using just one type of bulb, we try to include a warm white on one side and a cool white on the other side.
Right.
Because you get a broader piece of the spectrum. The cool white is better for the growing.
Right.
And the warm white promotes blooming of the plant. So a lot of us grow under that, and then eventually when you run out of places to hang those.
How many plants do you guys have?
I don't know about Gary.
Gary, how many orchids do you have?
Around a couple hundred, I guess.
Do you have a special room for them?
Yeah, it's growing. I used to do windowsills and then, of course, like Dan said, fluorescent lights, which work real well.
And but you can't use T12s anymore, right? The big old ones? So which ones are you using, T8s or T5s, or what have you gone to?
No, I've graduated to something crazy called high-pressure sodium.
Oh,
light,
yeah.
Which covers the larger room
size.
Sure,
covers the whole area. How about you, Stan?
Yeah, I've got high-pressure sodium. I got a couple in my room. I have a couple of high-pressure sodiums and a metal halide. Also,
so how many orchids do you have?
I have about 150. I mean, that's that last count. I don't even try to count them anymore.
Right.
So you each have an orchid room?
Yes, I do. Certainly, yes.
So that must be you. I would think they need to be between 70 and 80 degrees. You either have a well-insulated house or you have an orchid room. I mean, how in the world could you keep your house at 80 degrees in the wintertime here?
No. That's seasonal.
Okay.
My winter temps probably may get up to 70, and if it's sunny, 72. I mean, I'm not home during the day, so I don't heat the house to a high temp. And I let the evening temperatures drop to like 60. Or something.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. They tolerate that.
The lights themselves produce a lot of heat, especially those high-intensity lights, the high-intensity discharge lights, those sodium vapors. So they can bump. In a small room, you have a couple of those going. They can raise the temperature 5 or 6 degrees during the day. Mm-hmm. Then when they're off at night, you get that natural drop, which all orchids seem to appreciate. And I don't heat my basement at all, and my room in the basement stays at 60, low 60s by night and low 70s by day, just by way of the lights coming on and off.
Okay.
So that's worked out pretty well. Okay. Other lights that are now available and which I am switching over to and are much less expensive to operate, though a little more expensive to purchase, are the LED lights.
Yeah, talk about those, because a lot of people don't know a lot about those.
Yeah, I can't explain the technology of LED, but LED bulbs are now being sold again in all the hardware stores, right where you can buy your orchids.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them take a standard socket, and an 8-watt bulb might put out the same equivalent amount of light as a 60-watt incandescent bulb and not produce the heat. So,
and they're a lot cheaper to run.
They're much cheaper to run, yeah.
Okay.
And they last basically a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what the report is. I've never had one go bad yet, but I haven't had mine that long, obviously. They haven't been around that long.
What about the light spectrum for your orchids?
They come in each bulb, each package that I've ever seen of an LED light has got the degrees Kelvin printed right on it.
Yep.
And you can infer from the degrees Kelvin that this is really on the warm end of the spectrum, and that's on the cool end.
So as long as you have both spectrums, it works.
I alternate them in a track. I put mine in a track lighting across a table and just alternate them.
So is there anybody out there that has orchids that's wondering how to keep them and they've got a question they'd like to ask? Call 218-387-1070 or... I can never remember the 800 number, 1-800-473-9847, or email Barb at WTIP.
No, don't email, because I can't get to the email.
Oh, you can't. Okay, so you have to call. All right, call 387-1070. If you've been wondering any question about orchids, we have two experts online.
You know,
right, and let's use them.
I have a confession. So my neighbor, Sue, left me 4 orchids to babysit.
Oh, what are they?
Well,
you don't know.
they're not doing well, is what they are.
Uh-oh.
You know, because I sort of forgot about them. They were doing fine for a while. They were in a nice east window, and they were doing fine. But they were out in in the utility area, and I totally forgot about them until early this week when it got so nice and warm, and I thought, I'm going to go start cleaning out the, and I came across those orchids, and they look a little peaked.
Yeah.
Are they goners? Or are they just sleeping?
I couldn't really tell you by that description. Your roots would probably let you know. If the roots have dried up, it's a goner. If the roots...
So I'm just going to pull them out of those little pots and look at them?
Out of the pots, look at them, and if they're still nice and white and firm, it might have a chance.
Yeah,
and it's really hard. It's really hard to tell. They certainly got to be... You don't want to water them too much. It's better to underwater than it is to over, but you got to water them some.
And so it's like thawing something. You have to do it slowly.
And water them early in the day.
Okay.
So they have a chance to dry out by...
This is a stupid question. Do I pour water on? That's why I asked about the sprayer.
Sometimes, there's different... There's the ice cube method, which the water slowly drips in and drips out.
But we don't like the ice cube
method. I don't use ice cubes. I use much warmer water than that, for number one, because these are tropical plants. And I actually have a... fitting for a hose end sprayer that I just give. I give them a good soaking, which in my mind would be representative of the deluge that they got, and then I leave them go for a long time. That flush, it helps flush out.
I was thinking of maybe like a turkey baster, where you kind of drop a little bit, I don't know.
It's a sprinkling rain coming down from your turkey baster.
I do want to add one thing to the water discussion that has been mentioned at this point. That is that you do not want to use softened water. So many, if people don't know that, this would be for any house plant. A lot of houses have got water softeners in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a hard water area, And softened water contains sodium, obviously, which will kill plants. It's toxic to orchids, and I would guess most other plants too. Oftentimes, and they should, the plumber shouldn't have put softened water at the cold water tap in the kitchen sink. That's often the only outlet in the house, inside the house, that doesn't have softened water. So that's generally a safe bet. If you're taking your water from that, take it from the cold water tap in the kitchen sink.
Well, so can you buy water?
You can buy water.
Should you buy, like, natural water and not the water that's condensed steam?
You're talking about distilled water?
Yeah, should you get distilled water or just natural water?
Well, you know, they're pretty tolerant. They take rainwater. You could get Lake Superior water. Be perfect.
You could warm it up.
Yeah, right. You don't want to like ice cubes, necessarily. You could also catch rainwater in a rain barrel.
Okay.
It's perfect. Yep. That's what they'd be getting in nature.
That's what I do.
Is that what you do?
Yeah.
Well, summer. Yeah. If you've got 100-some plants or 200-some plants, it takes quite a bit of time to water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I put them outside, a lot of them, and in dappled shade.
Oh, and, you do?
Yeah. And
okay.
Off the ground so they don't get slugs. The deer don't bother them as a rule. They might take a bite, but they won't pester them.
They don't eat the flowers?
If they're in flower, I bring it in.
Okay.
It's on my table, you know. But, yeah, so summer is actually quite quick to water. I use a garden can sprinkler and just, you know, before I go to work in the morning, zap them all. Well, depending on the weather, of course, sometimes I have to water them every 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the wind, you know, things dry out. And very quick. Now, the phalaenopsis I don't put outside in the summer myself. But
is it too cool for them?
The sun, if they got direct sun, they would burn.
Yeah.
Leaves.
So let's talk a little bit about pests of orchids. And I know, Stan, one time you and I had a conversation. I'm going to deviate a little bit. We were talking about putting cinnamon on. You cut a part of an orchid and you put cinnamon on it. Talk about that.
Well, that's really a remedy more for if you've got a bacterial or fungal infection in the leaf and the leaf is starting to turn black on the edges, and it will progress toward the center of the plant, and it may even eventually kill the plant. So they found that regular granular cinnamon works good in a powdered form. If you can coat the edges of a freshly cut leaf with that, it has good antifungal and antibacterial properties.
So you just cut off that area. What about the root? If you had like a root rot or something,
you wouldn't bother
just,
there. You
just
cut
leaf.
The root off. Just the leaf.
Okay.
You cut the root off if it's a bad one. You're repotting. Just get rid of that.
And they'll get new roots coming
on.
They
have
that
new
way.
Roots. They produce new roots every year, at least once a year.
Yeah. What about insect pests?
Yeah, we have. Well, if you don't put your plants outside, you aren't dealing with the chewing insects. But if you do, you could be dealing with grasshoppers, thrips, or anything else that would eat vegetation. But indoors, you're dealing with scale, mealybugs. You can be dealing with those. And also mites. And mites are a particular problem because they're so small, you don't see them.
Yeah.
You only see the damage that they do.
You're talking spider mites.
The little teeny tiny spider mites
that we get on other things.
And even fall spider mites, which are smaller yet.
Yeah.
Cinnamon work on those?
No. Cinnamon does not work on those.
And we have a call.
What works on those?
Have a question? Oh. Okay.
What works on those?
On which now?
Do you use pesticide? Things
I do.
Natural,
I am not. I'm not averse to using pesticides to save my plants. There are fairly benign pesticides out there, and there are some fairly benign miticides now. The miticides they're starting to catch up with the issue. Orchids are kept in such close proximity and kept in conditions that just favor.
Right,
insects.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, you keep them, you know, year after year after year, and I can imagine how if you don't keep those pests under control, you're going to have plants that you're throwing away.
You will.
You know, they're like really waxy leaves on them. Could you kind of do a dip in like a soap solution? Or doesn't that?
Not soap. People, I mean, there's innumerable sorts of things that you can use. There are organic products. There's Safers, which is a soap solution.
Yeah,
some people like to go at it individually with a Q-tip and alcohol, but that's a losing battle, I think.
Well, I've tried that for some things, but it like you say, if you've got 200 plants, if you've only got one orchid at home or two, that works great.
Right. You can focus on that one plant and just keep at it because their life cycles are oftentimes, those insect life cycles are a week or less, and they just get out of control.
I'm just imagining this, like picking up the whole plant out of its growth medium and like dipping it in a
and then rebucket
alcohol. Yeah.
Dipping it in a bucket of insecticidal soap, and then
you can certainly spray the plant, the leaf surfaces, upper and under leaf surfaces, the stems, and making sure that
like a flea dip in a dog.
Yeah. Okay. So, Gary, what do you do? Is there an organic method that you can use?
Well, there are, besides the soap and alcohol, there's certain mealybugs that are susceptible to alcohol very quickly. They succumb. And I've taken the plant out of the medium and just sprayed it with isopropyl alcohol.
Oh. And has that worked?
Yeah.
Oh.
It'll work.
Okay.
You'll have to do it again in a week, because there may be eggs that are hatching, and I would do it, in 3 weeks in a row. And that would take care of, like, mealybugs. But something like scale is a little more difficult. You have to be a little more aggressive, like Dan says, not be averse. If you are averse, you are probably going to be having scale problems forever.
So you almost have to use an insecticide.
Occasionally, at least.
So when you buy your plants, I would think that you would try and look at them very carefully to make sure they're not infected with any of these bugs or scale or anything. Like, you know, get a plant that looks really healthy and that doesn't have any marks on it.
And isolate it, maybe, before you introduce it. Do you do that? Do you isolate new ones?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Before you introduce them. Barb?
Hey, I just want to remind everybody that support for Northern Gardening comes from Superior Lumber and Sports, a full-size lumber and hardware store located 1 mile east of Grand Marais. Superior Lumber and Sports is locally owned and offers a wide range of building, landscaping, and garden supplies. Give them a call at 387-1771. And also from our friends at the Blue Moose, who are open 7 days a week in season on Highway 61 on the west end of Grand Marais, with annual flowers, vegetables, and herbs, along with northern climate perennials, shrubs, and trees, and I bet they'll have orchids. The Blue Moose also offers landscaping services and unique garden and home gifts.
So if you're just starting out with orchids, Stan and Gary, if you had to recommend a couple of easy, really pretty, fun orchids, and I know the beauty's in the eye of the beholder, what would you recommend? Now, some of these orchids bloom again and some don't. What would you recommend to someone?
You want to take it, Gary?
Okay. I would recommend them to get something they enjoy looking at. And that will kind of hook you on the orchid bug or delirium. The other thing is go to an orchid show or a greenhouse that has many orchid types, and you'll be totally amazed at what's possible.
So is there any place in Duluth that people can go and see a whole bunch of orchids from our area?
Well, the Orchid Society in Minneapolis and the Orchid Society in Duluth, they both have displays 2-3 times a year. If you go to a meeting, which is monthly, that people bring their orchids that are in bloom.
So they could actually go to the website, Northern
Northland Orchid
Northland
Society.
Orchid Society. And then they could look to see when the next meeting or the next event might be, if
right.
they wanted to kind of look and talk to a few people and kind of figure out if this is something for them.
You always have at the horticulture building at the state fair, there's a kind of a regular schedule every year,
yes.
you know, when the dahlia people are there and the orchid
yeah.
guys and the mm-hmm. bonsai guys, and that orchid show is really amazing. So plan your state fair visit for the orchid show.
I can tell you that show has been for the last, well, as long as I've been a member, and much before that, I guess, so it's 30 or 40 years we've had the last weekend of the state fair, and it's the last Friday Saturday of the state fair, and we're in the horticulture building. If you think that show is good, the Winter Carnival will knock its socks off.
In St. Paul.
Where are the orchids? I've never been to the Winter Carnival. I can imagine it's not in the Ice Palace.
It's at the Marjorie McNeely Conservatory, or what used to be called the Como Conservatory. At Como Lake.
Yep. Yeah.
It's held there. It's the last weekend in January.
And I have been to that, you mention it, and it is wonderful.
For the most part, most of the orchids that I know of, the better ones, seem to bloom in the winter more so than in the mm-hmm. summer, which is a little contradictory, you'd think. But
well, and the setting is so perfect, too,
absolutely.
Because it's this beautiful conservatory, Victorian building, remodeled now.
Everything is more tropical in there, and you can just look outside and see what you left behind, snowbanks mm-hmm. and whatnot. So it's a little bit of a logistical issue getting your plants there. I've lost flowers trying to get mine there a couple of times, but that was probably as much of my fault. Too hurried to pack them, and packing them. But that's the far better show to attend. It's got way more diversity, more plants, more spectacular plants.
What about the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum? They often will have an orchid display.
We don't participate in it.
You don't participate in that one. Okay.
That's put on by Orchids Limited, a business in Plymouth.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay, so that's another option maybe for people, but...
Correct.
So I noticed you had a book there, Diane. Is there books you're recommending people get?
I was asking Stan about this one. I bought this one for myself, and now it's in the office. So it's at the Extension office if anybody's interested. I have a couple of orchid books, but this is called Bloom Again Orchids, 50 Easy Care Orchids That Flower... Again and again and again, which for me is by Judy White. And she's actually the author of The Tailor's Guide to Orchids. What I liked were the fabulous pictures. I mean, if I can get hooked just looking at the pictures, imagine what I would get hooked on if
those
I actually
those look like somebody like embroidered them or something.
Yeah.
The patterns on them are that.
Yeah. And I think, like Stan was saying, these bloom during the wintertime when it's kind of not the best place to be in cold climates. And just to think that these are blooming in the wintertime and they last for a month or two, I mean, what a great thing. Stan, favorite orchid or orchids that you would recommend to people beginning?
Well, certainly the Phalaenopsis is the easiest to grow. And certainly the more popular, probably that because it's been mass-produced a lot. It doesn't take anything away from their beauty, but it makes them less expensive than some of the others. You have to go someplace other than Home Depot or places like that to get other ones. But certainly Paphiopedilums, which are the Asian slipper orchids, are available in the Twin Cities and are also available whenever orchid societies have their annual sales. And we have an annual sale in September down in the Twin Cities where members are parting with old friends and looking for new ones. We usually end up going home with more than we came with, but the public is invited to all of those things and can pick up any number of different kinds. But certainly paths are easy to grow. Again, your window is all you need. I'm just thinking of things that you don't have to invest in lights. Probably you don't have to do anything in terms of humidity. Temperature of a house, 65 to 75 is just about right for them.
Fabulous.
And they got to be repotted every couple of years. That's about what you
got to do. Are the potting materials, substrates available locally? Pre-mixed?
When you say locally, I don't know about in Grand Marais. I would tend to doubt it unless over at the flower shop they might have
something. Well, I don't know. Bucks has all kinds of packages of really specialized mixes, you might look and through there, because I think I remember seeing orchid mix.
Well, and
once.
I think you can mix your own mix.
You need some bark.
Yeah,
you can make a mixture for plants with bark, perlite, and a little charcoal.
Yeah,
but you've got to have them and put them in the right proportion. And
there's a lot of recipes out there for the different orchids.
But this stuff is available, Gary. In Duluth, I've got to believe that some of the bigger greenhouses probably would have that, right?
They do, but it's probably going to be stale. It's been probably...
Oh.
It might be a little damp and been sitting around a long time.
So what do you recommend?
The best bet is to go to an orchid event where there'll be sales of potting media. And you'll be able to talk to people that are selling it to ask questions. And
so is there very specific mixes for different orchids, I'm thinking, somewhat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
There are
different sizes of bark.
Okay.
The smaller rooted with plants would take a finer bark. And the thicker rooted plants take a thicker bark. So the water runs through.
So I think we're going to probably leave it at there, because I think we're getting into some real specifics based upon different orchids. And
sure.
But we have a couple of announcements we want to make. There is going to be a Pyluck Northwoods
Potluck?
Food.
A Pyluck Potluck?
Pyluck Potluck,
yeah.
Sorry. The Northwoods Food Project is sponsoring a Pyluck Potluck on Saturday. That's this upcoming Saturday, March 14th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. in the 4-H Log Cabin Building at the Cook County Community Center. This is in honor of...
International Pie Day, P-I. Here we go. Here's your pun.
Oh.
And that is this ratio between the circumference and diameter of a circle, and it's 3.1415. Those are the first letters of it. And guess what? We are going to have the event on 3/14/15. We are going to have it on, and it won't happen for another 100 years. And so we're asking people to bring a pie, any kind of pie, a savory pie, a berry pie, a shepherd's pie, a pizza pie.
Whatever. If
yeah.
it's a pie and it looks like
vegetarian pie,
it
a crustless pie, we'd probably appreciate some of those. Anyway, and so it's a potluck open to the public starting at 5:30. It's a 4-H building. There's no kitchen facilities. So please bring, you know, your pie ready to be served, and something to serve it with if you could. We will have paper plates there to put it on.
And something to drink,
I believe. Something to drink.
Okay.
Yep.
So
something that can be served room temperature.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah. What's that Alaskan pie thing that you put ice cream on?
There's a refrigerator and a freezer over
there. Oh,
there
is a refrigerator.
Yeah, so you could do something cold.
Yeah, you could. Ice cream pie.
Yeah, can't do anything.
Apple Grafting Workshop will take place on Saturday, March 21st, from 10 a.m. till noon at the 4-H Log Cabin Building at the Community Center. The cost is $10. You can call the Extension Office at 218-387-3015 to reserve your space, or just take a chance and show up. We also have the seed bank going at the Cook County Extension Office. We have a lot of seeds that have been donated. So if you have a community project you need seeds for, or if the cost of seeds is difficult for you, you're welcome to stop in and take a look and take mm-hmm. some seeds home. We want to see people garden.
Yeah.
So I'd like to thank Gary and Stan. Great job.
Thank you so much. It was really fun. I learned a lot.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
And
thanks.
So the next gardening radio show will be on Thursday, April 9th from 7 to 8 p.m. And we're hoping to have Dr. Wendy Tahiri on to discuss mycorrhizal fungi, something else we don't know a lot about, but will be really interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.